making TV special.
Dennis. Made with creamy butter.
And you know what that means.
It's happening. I can feel it.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're floating in space.
Giant step each day. All I want in life's a little bit of love to take the pain away. Getting strong today. A giant step each day. All I want in life's a little bit of love to take the pain away. Getting strong today. A giant step.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are floating in space. But alas, not NASA's Discovery, but we'll get to that in just a second. Welcome to this B-side of episode 114 of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. Coming to you from my apartment in downtown Portland, Oregon, just after 9:30 here on Wednesday evening. It's a deadly 3:11. And as I took a nap this afternoon, evening, and woke up, and as I brought up the browser, I said, don't be anything bad about the shuttle. There's already been so much. This would just be the next big thing. But fortunately, I think, Discovery launch postponed. Gas leak halts NASA trip to the space station. NASA postponed the launch of the space shuttle Discovery just hours before it was to head to the International Space Station Wednesday because of a hydrogen gas leak that could have been catastrophic at liftoff. The leak was the same, or rather was in the same system that has already caused a vexing 1 month delay. Shuttle managers were shooting for another launch attempt Thursday night, provided they could fix the problem quickly. I say I was relieved that this didn't go up because, as we've seen, shuttles have a bad habit of blowing up in the early part of the year. And as we've seen today, and as we're not going to really get into on this B-side, we're going to save it for episode 115 this Friday the 13th. The mass shootings and the copycats. I said it on the show last Friday, and I reiterated it Sunday after Sunday's church shooting in Illinois. But now we have, of course, 10 dead in Alabama on Tuesday night, 17 dead in Germany today. And again, I'm sure we will revisit these stories as we find out the involvement of pharmaceuticals or the feds or forewarnings or God knows what. But ladies and gentlemen, we are floating in space, and we heard that opening title track from the fantastic Ladies and Gentlemen, We Are Floating in Space album by Spiritualized, going back to 97 and definitely a desert island disc. It's one of those, it just has the complete package. You have to actually buy the album from Spiritualized. The graphic design is all as if it were a pharmaceutical. So it folds out really huge like it is a pharmaceutical insert, and it has questions. How often should I take Spiritualized, or when should I discontinue use? And it's just genius. Space rock. Fantastic. But I digress. There is much to go over on this B-side, and it's going to be painful. But staying on the space tip, let's cover a few twisted tales of the coming cyber wars. NSA, DHS, APAC and the web, a cyber tug of war. The first few stories we're going to hit, of course, are coming from Threat Level, from Wired.com, and we'll of course mention the numerous links and spiderweb connections to all these stories. First, and these go in order in a way, tells a tale, if you will. NSA chief continues bid to take over cybersecurity. In the wake of the resignation on Friday of National Cybersecurity Center Director Rod Beckstrom over concerns that the National Security Agency plans to take over government cybersecurity efforts, now comes an announcement that NSA Director Lieutenant General Keith Alexander will be giving the keynote address at this year's RSA Security Conference. The talk is being billed as an explanation about why cybersecurity is a national security issue. The release says Alexander will be talking about, quote, how the internet enables cyber criminals and others in conducting targeted attacks and what can be done to combat this threat. The Bush administration frequently tried to equate crime on the internet with national security to gather support for its interest in monitoring internet activities. The NSA's Alexander's RSA talk will likely continue this trend and serve to bolster the NSA's efforts to wrest control of the government's cybersecurity efforts from the Department of Homeland Stupidity, a prospect that concerns civil liberties advocates, given the NSA's acknowledged warrantless domestic wiretapping program and allegations that the agency also secretly tapped domestic internet communications without a warrant. Last month, Director of National Intelligence Admiral Dennis Blair told Congress that the NSA, rather than the DHS, which currently oversees cybersecurity, should take over the government's cybersecurity efforts. A week later, Beckstrom, DHS's current cybersecurity chief, tendered his resignation. And so the first of numerous links and downloads for you are Beckstrom's resignation letter in a PDF for you there, thanks to Threat Level. And many links to the other stories that tie this together from places like Business Wire. And you can, of course, go to rsaconference.com and see where the spooks are talking. The next one, outgoing DHS cyber chief, that would be Rod Beckstrom, expands on why he resigned. In an interview with Forbes on Monday, with a link for you, Beckstrom said, quote, "In intelligence environments like the NSA, you seek out and gather information and then you classify it. It's the opposite of collaboration. He added that, quote, these are companies that are comfortable working in classified environments, and there are those that aren't. That would be one reason to support a credible civilian independent component like the NCSC. Otherwise, we'd lose those relationships we gained by bringing these companies into the fold. What that exactly means, I can't really discern at the moment. In his resignation letter, Beckstrom said the NSA is trying to move the NCSC to its base at Fort Meade in Maryland, home of the NSA, or at least the one they tell us about, a move he opposes on grounds that it would concentrate too much authority in one place. The issue is that we have a federated government decentralized for a reason. Our founding fathers never believed that power should be concentrated in one place, and what today is more powerful than information? The third story from Threat Level, and involving this unholy alliance of the NSA and the Department of Homeland Security and your internet, NSA dominance of cybersecurity would lead to grave peril. The government's national cybersecurity efforts would be in grave peril if they were dominated by the intelligence community, said Amit Yoran. That's A-M-I-T-Y-O-R-A-N. Amit Yoran, former head of the Department of Homeland Security's National Cybersecurity Division. So, stopping quickly, you basically have this dude, Amit Yoran, as well as Rod Beckstrom going, this isn't how you do it. And we see this a lot of times when we see officials or governors or what have you objecting to these federal fascist mandates that come down. It's good that they object to them, but you'll find they never generally object to them on reasons and grounds of this being a fascist takeover. They usually just say, well, it's too much money or it's a bureaucracy and blah, blah, blah. But resistance is resistance, and we'll take it wherever we can get it. Continuing. Yoren told a House subcommittee on Tuesday that although the Department of Homeland Security, which currently oversees the government's cybersecurity efforts, has demonstrated, quote, inefficiency and leadership failure, end quote, in those efforts, demonstrated inefficiency and leadership failure in those efforts, moving the cyber mission to the NSA would be ill-advised due to the agency's lack of transparency. 2 weeks ago, Director of National Intelligence Admiral Dennis Blair told the House Intelligence Committee that the NSA should take over government cybersecurity duties because the agency has the smarts and the skills for the job. But Yoren, who served as a one-time CEO of NQTEL, the venture capital arm of the Central Intelligence Agency, said a cyber program overseen by the NSA would be overclassified and lack adequate oversight and review, which is needed to gain the trust of the public and private sector partners who will be needed to secure the nation's infrastructure. One of the hard lessons learned from the terrorist surveillance program is that such a limited review can lead to ineffective legal vetting of a program. The cyber mission cannot be plagued by the same flaws as the TSP. Yoren's comments echoed those made by Rod Beckstrom, the DHS's current cyber chief, who tendered his resignation last week in part over concerns about the NSA assuming a leading role in the government's cybersecurity plan. Links in there, of course, to NSA Electronic Surveillance Program. That's just a little quick rundown from Wikipedia about the terrorist surveillance program, and more on NQTEL. It's INQTEL, the venture capital arm of the CIA. Which makes sense when you know that the CIA was pretty much set up by a bunch of Dulles Wall Street banksters. Now this story, NSA, DHS, now we get a little bit of AIPAC and the Israel lobby, and now it starts to get a little ugly. Now it starts to get a little coverage. From thinkprogress.org, Charles Freeman pulls his appointment. And we hear many of the same names over and over again, with a few new ones thrown in. A new statement from the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair's office, quote, Director of National Intelligence Dennis C. Blair announced today that Ambassador Charles W. Freeman Jr. has requested that his selection to be chairman of the National Intelligence Council not proceed. Director Blair accepted Ambassador Freeman's decision with regret. Freeman's appointment was met by strong right-wing outrage, provoking a fierce behind-the-scenes lobbying campaign to torpedo the appointment. The Wonk Rooms, that's one of the sister sites of Think Progress, they noted that Freeman voiced, quote, some inconvenient truths about the Israel-Palestine conflict and represented a challenge to the treasured neoconservative myth that U.S. and Israeli interests are identical. Today, Dennis Blair defended Freeman's appointment under questioning from Joe Lieberman, the independent from Connecticut. We have some of the other articles. We've got the full statement from Freeman following his decision not to serve as National Intelligence Council chairman. You can read that whole thing again, Huffington Post. And ABC News, exiting Freeman attacks Israel lobby. In an angry cable to Foreign Policy, Chaz Freeman, the now former nominee to chair the National Intelligence Council, attacks the Israel lobby, he says, is behind a barrage of libelous distortions, and says his sandbagged career in the Obama administration, quote, will be seen by many to raise serious questions about whether the Obama administration will be able to make its own decisions about the Middle East and related issues. Foreign Policy, of course, being the bullhorn of the Council on Foreign Relations. So, of course, anytime the Israel lobby comes up, and anytime we broach this dirty, nasty elephant in the room topic, we definitely got to get our man from... I can't remember. I don't think he's actually from AIPAC, but he's from some Israel First lobby. So when a story like this happens, you got to get their man, Wolf Blitzer, out in front to lay it down. So here he is on CNN. Key intelligence pick withdraws after fierce criticism.
Ambassador Chaz Freeman pulls himself from consideration as head of the National Intelligence Council. His critics in Congress say it's the right move.
The statements that he's made, the relationships that he's made, don't disqualify him from being in the administration, but clearly disqualify him from the sensitive position.
In that post, Freeman would have put together America's most important intelligence documents for the president's consumption, but his past alliances drew concern. Well,
Chaz Freeman has a disturbing history of shilling for autocratic regimes and letting his admiration for autocratic regimes like China, like Saudi Arabia, skew his analysis.
A former U.S. ambassador to Saudi Arabia, Freeman has headed a Washington public affairs group that's gotten funding from the Saudi government. He's drawn criticism for his views on Israel. In a 2007 speech, he talked about the brutal oppression of the Palestinians by an Israeli occupation that shows no signs of ending. Freeman's also a former U.S. diplomat in Beijing, and critics cite an email he once sent saying the Chinese had a right to crack down on dissidents in Tiananmen Square, who they felt were disrupting the functions of government. The man was looking to appoint him, National Intelligence Chief Dennis Blair, was still defending him just hours before Freeman withdrew, saying Freeman's remarks on China and other matters have been taken out of context, and that his strong opinions have always been an asset.
When we go back and forth with him, better understanding comes out of this interaction.
And one former ambassador is concerned Freeman's free thinking drew so much fire.
If there are opinions or questions which are so taboo that in this country we can't ask those questions, then we are going to have pretty sorry intelligence analysis as a result.
But Freeman has a financial tie with China as well. He's been a paid board member of an oil company that has direct ties to the Chinese government, a company that's done business in Iran. Now, Admiral Blair has said that Freeman only met with that group once a year, made it clear he could not deal with anything regarding Iran. But in the end, all the scrutiny over Chaz Freeman was just too much to bear, Wolf, and he had to bow out this afternoon.
There was also some added pressure because of intelligence estimates. What's going on?
Right, you know the history of these. The infamous one in 2002 where they said Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. There was the one in 2007. Where the intelligence estimate said that Iran had stopped its production of a nuclear weapon. That was under heavy question. Because of those documents, the scrutiny over this particular job was such that they felt someone had to be completely objective. I guess in the eyes of too many people, Chaz Freeman didn't meet that test.
Brian Todd, good report. Thanks.
NSA, DHS, the Israel lobby, and the web, the coming cyber tug of war. And that's just a taste of what's to come. Now, however, unfortunately, I'm sorry, my friends, it's painful. but it's time for the 311 news purge. I had to do it. Too much piling up. You basically hit the evacuate button and I dump it all out on the site in just headlines. And it's not sexy, and it doesn't do these important stories and articles and audio and video and links justice. But I hope that if you're on board with this show and trying to spread the word and tell people what's going on, which now is easier than ever before with all of the little tools that we have at our disposal. And remember, they are all just tools. It's what you do with them, not what they do to you or with you. So I posted up the massive 311 news purge today, being, of course, quite the busy 311. And of course, we pause for a moment to remember the bombings in Madrid, train bombings, more probable examples of state-sponsored false flag terrorism. But we're going to start this 311 news purge with the 9/11 updates, and of course, you got to paint them as dummies. America's next top model is a crazy conspiracy theorist.
Meet Monique.
So I'm very involved in politics. I guess you could call me a conspiracy theorist.
She wants to be America's next top model.
Do you think the government did what with 9/11?
I think they started it basically because we're going to go into a third world war pretty soon.
America's next top model. 2-hour premiere Wednesday, March 4th on the CW.
America's next top model is a crazy conspiracy theorist, or at least that's how she's portrayed in this quick little spot for retarded television that I hope to God you don't waste a fucking second on, like we're kind of doing right now, but no, sitting there watching it. Counselor Fujita publishes a book on 9/11. He, of course, is the member of the Japanese parliament who publicly added himself to the list of the thousands and thousands and thousands, and if not millions, of people who reject the official story of 9/11. He, of course, gained quite a bit of attention last year, though, of course, not near damn enough. However, he's got a book on 9/11 put out, and again, thanks to 9/11 Blogger for a lot of times a lot of the great 9/11 updates. Not the end-all be-all by any stretch. I don't kiss 9/11 Blogger's ass or anything, but they do good work. The last few updates are, of course, all relating to the five beaten and tortured patsies who say they're terrorists to the bone and they all admit planning 9/11. The couple links I have up for you go to, of course, New York Times, but we also have Russia Today and the Deutsche Press.
Five detainees at the U.S. Guantanamo Bay camp have taken full responsibility for the 9/11 attacks that claimed the lives of over 3,000 people in New York in 2001. That's according to a report in the New York Times. The confession comes from a document filed on behalf of the five men, including Khalid Sahid Mohammed, who describes himself as a mastermind of the attacks. According to the paper, the men express pride at their accomplishment and see U.S. accusations against them as a badge of honor. The cases of the men are currently suspended as President Obama halted the military proceedings at Guantanamo shortly after his inauguration in January.
Do you think guys like this really would call themselves terrorists to the bone? Would they refer to themselves as that? I don't think so. But we don't know, because we're not allowed to know anything about these phony kangaroo court military tribunal bullshit dog and pony shows that are going on. As they're trying to, it's like, God, how come, okay, we're done with 9/11. We need to put 9/11 away. Or at least any kind of investigation into the shit that surrounds it. You know, the measures we passed after 9/11, you know, we want to keep all that stuff, but can we end these court things? Which brings us to, of course, the Obamasiah. I had had a friend, I think, recently ask, you know, about me to someone. Was like, oh, what's James think of Obama? And he was like, you should probably talk to him yourself about that. It's like, but I think he pretty much has followed his every move. I would probably have to say I've probably followed his moves more than the average Obamatron has post-election. They, of course, now think everything's rosy because we've got a Democrat in office. Meanwhile, bank account is... Webster Tarpley kicks off these Obama-Sci updates with an article called Obamavilles in America. And this is posted up on, I'm grabbing it from InfoWars, I'm sure it's up on Rents and many other places. And I have noticed before, thought this, I don't know if I've voiced it, that Tarpley does such good work, he just doesn't have a good web presence. He needs somebody that, to run a blog for him, to always post up all his articles and all of his radio shows and all that stuff. But, alas, Obamavilles in America. In the Depression of the 1890s, the term for a bread line was a Cleveland cafe, named after the Wall Street puppet who turned the government over to J.P. Morgan, London, and their cross of gold. In the 1930s, a shanty town was a Hooverville. In this depression, the wretched victims of foreclosure by Obama's pals at Goldman Sachs, Citibank, and J.P. Morgan live and die in Obamavilles. The arrogant and elitist in the White House does not care. Obama is presiding over a $10 trillion bank bailout, all money down a rat hole. Meanwhile, Obama's so-called anti-foreclosure program is an incentive payment bonanza for predatory subprime lenders, the Angelo Mozillos of Countrywide and their ilk, who sold subprime adjustable rate mortgages, which should have been illegal all along. The article goes on to note the steps needed to basically survive the cataclysm, as is the name of Tarpley's new reissued and updated book. And of course, one of those would be to stop foreclosures with a law now. And the other, of course, being wiping out derivatives. But we can't get into that. We're going to keep hitting the headlines in this 311 News Purge on the Obamasaya updates. Web-savvy Obama rarely reads blogs. He says they're misleading. That's from Raw Story, and I believe they were following around Obama. I'm not sure if this source is from... Yes, it was a New York Times interview aboard Air Force One. Wired, Wikipedia, WorldNet Daily, and Fox are all bitching and whitewashing about Obama's past. It's not worth it to get into, but it's basically questions and straw mans, and you did it, and he said, and you're bad, and left and right, and blah. Obama engages in eugenics. That's from energypublisher.com. Obama takes on the black budget. That's from the Honolulu Exopolitics Examiner. Obama's top economic advisor says more money for the banksters. That's, of course, from Kurt Nimmo. There's a few here, and I believe the film has now been unleashed, as I believe he was sort of itching and threatening to do earlier today on the radio, but Alex Jones's latest documentary, The Obama Deception, earlier in the day, alternate trailer number 2, and about a 10-minute sneak peek video was put up, but now I believe he's gone ahead and launched the whole thing on PrisonPlanet.tv. But we've got Fight Back Against the Bankster Onslaught with The Obama Deception, as well as trailer number 2 and the 10-minute sneak peeks, all linked up for you, and once we get a chance to actually see the whole documentary, as it probably will over the weekend, we can discuss this. Hopefully something like this, it's well-timed. Hopefully it's very pointed and well-produced and will be something I'm not, you know, sort of ashamed or nervous to quickly hand out to people. The Obama Deception. But we jump now to... This does tie in with a lot of the memes that we're now seeing of this sort of homegrown terrorism, whether it's shooters or crazy people burning things down or blowing things up or slain U.S. Nazi hated Obama and had parts for a dirty bomb. We've got the video. We've got the articles from Raw Story. This is a strange one, and again, this ties into the homegrown terrorism idea that I said before, that once a Democrat said this many, many times before the election, go back, listen to the shows. When a Democrat comes into office, we'll shift back into the Clinton-era thing, where the new enemies will, of course, shift back to being the sort of homeland Timothy McVeigh, school shooter, Waco, militiamen enemies, which will tie into white Al-Qaeda homegrown terrorism and the turning inward of this fascist state. Slain U.S. Nazi hated Obama and had parts for a dirty bomb. Trust fund millionaire James G. Cummings, an American Nazi sympathizer from Maine who was slain by his wife Amber in December, allegedly had the radioactive components necessary to construct a dirty bomb, a newly released threat analysis report states. The man, allegedly furious over the election of Obama, purchased depleted uranium over the internet from an American company. Quote, according to an FBI field intelligence report from the Washington Regional Threat and Analysis Center, posted online thanks to WikiLeaks.org, and again, this is now several episodes in a row where WikiLeaks.org is providing the goods, leaked documents for all to see. According to an FBI field intelligence report, thanks to WikiLeaks, an organization that posts leaked documents, an investigation into the case revealed that radioactive materials were removed from Cummings' home after his shooting death on December 9th, reported the Banger Daily News, with a link for you, bangernews.com. Amber indicted James, or rather, Amber, the wife, Amber Cummings, indicated James was very upset with Barack Obama being elected president, reported the regional threat assessment. And again, you can hit the PDF of it. She indicated James had been in contact with white supremacist groups. Amber also indicated James mixed chemicals in the kitchen sink at their residence and had mentioned dirty bombs. Also found was literature on how to build dirty bombs and information about cesium-137, strontium-90, cobalt-60, radioactive materials, and on, and was a supposed Nazi sympathizer and had posters and blah, blah, blah. There's an interview with the Belfast police chief. And no, we're not talking about Belfast, Ireland, because, of course, there were strange shootings in Ireland recently where the cops stood down, and there might have even been a drill going on, but we'll get to that in a moment. Belfast police chief, and that would be of Belfast, Maine, where, of course, slain U.S. Nazi hated Obama and had parts for a dirty bomb.
The stuff that he had wasn't dangerous. The way it was, in its present form, it wasn't dangerous to the community.
In its present form?
Yeah. You had to, the technicians told me what you had to do, but, I mean, you had to get real close for long, long periods of time before we even have any effect, as far as the radioactivity.
And that was a major concern.
Well, yeah, because when the stuff was found, I mean, obviously, the detectives from the state police and our folks, we didn't know what it was. But there was no danger to the community. That was established fairly quickly.
Did you have any calls or anything this morning?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. About the community members concerned, or?
Well, just about the story that you folks had in your paper there. Once we handed it off to the state police, I mean, Detective McFadden assisted him with some stuff, but my involvement since that point, since the day he was killed, it's been little to none.
Right. So you were, the minute they heard that there was some kind of materials in the building, the disposal people came down and then assured you right away that.
Right. I mean, if you guys remember, you kept asking us why is it taking so long? You know,
right.
We had to wait for that team, the National Guard CST team. Yeah.
It wasn't like he had big chunks of uranium. It was just small amounts of.
I didn't see the stuff, so my exposure to the interior of the house was pretty limited.
So you weren't surprised that we finally, I mean, there was rumors going around almost from day one that they pulled some stuff out of that building.
No, I knew about it, you know, from, yeah.
And I did too, but I nobody confirmed it.
Right.
Until I found his document the other day.
Yeah.
And how that got leaked out, who knows? Somewhere out of Washington, I guess. So your calls this morning weren't from citizens that were alarmed.
Oh, no, I haven't had any.
Mostly just press calls. And
oh, yeah, we've had it. It's just been press calls. Like I said, the AP called, and then there was another station that called and talked to Mike McFadden. So, no, we haven't had any citizen calls. No.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of.
And, of course, that stuff was removed right away, although they did take a long time to
I can't remember
go through
exactly
the house.
When it was actually removed. Like I said, I might...
But they isolated it, and I imagine. Huh?
I mean, it was taken care of safely.
Yeah.
I mean, those CST folks, they know what they're doing.
So a quick note now from InfoWars. Obama hater had materials for dirty bomb. Forget white al-Qaeda, sleeper cells of deranged jihadists, and violent Ron Paul supporters of the sort Glenn Beck warned us about. Yeah, see, we forget about that now. Remember that? The latest enemy now surfacing in the media was a trust fund millionaire, a Nazi sympathizer, and an Obama hater who supposedly planned to build a dirty bomb. So we just heard Lieutenant Rusty Noe, N-O-E, of Mendocino County Sheriff's Office telling the Banger Daily News in Maine that James G. Cummings II, quote, was a white supremacist with a cache of radioactive materials and directions for building a dirty bomb in his Belfast home, end quote. It is not known what the trust fund baby planned to do with this material, not that it matters now, because his wife killed him last December. Being painted as crazy, and that's the thing, it lumps it all together. We'll probably find out later he thought 9/11 was an inside job, too. We now return to mentioning the Obama New York Times interview where the World Socialist website WSWS.org notes that military aggression and attacks on democratic rights to continue. But he didn't really say it in those words. Another mention and another appearance of Ron Paul on the Alex Jones Show, where, of course, he notes that Obama's foreign policy is pretty much identical to Bush. And those links and clips are there for you. And we're going to wrap up this Obama SIA update with the most recent update that I have for you just in the last couple of hours. Ex-New York City health commissioner tapped for the FDA. Obama intends to name former New York City health commissioner Margaret Hamburg to lead the troubled Food and Drug Administration. Hamburg and Baltimore health commissioner Joshua Sharfstein have been talked about for weeks as the leading candidates for the two top spots at the agency, with Sharfstein as Hamburg's deputy commissioner. Hamburg and Sharfstein. And I'm sure they will do fine work for us at the FDA, like make your farmer's market illegal and God knows what else. But we'll get to that, too. Now let's jump to the Police State International heading, where first we have disaster drills going on in Arizona that will not affect hospitals' activities. That's from evliving.com. That's the local report at a small town somewhere in Arizona. Telling you about terror drills, but it, you know, won't affect your commute. Thoughts of stormtroopers filling spy cases. That's an interesting one from Threat Level. UK police data bank on thousands and thousands of protesters.
Well, I'm with Jason Parkinson and Jess Hurd. Jason's a videographer and Jess a photographer, but both cover protests a lot. And over the last few years, I've had experience of police and policing of protests, and also have been at the sharp end of surveillance activities as well. And they've had personal experiences of police surveilling them and their colleagues. Can you tell me, Jason, the first time you kind of felt that there was a slight change in the way police tactically were approaching protests?
The first time I actually noticed the Ford intelligence team taking an interest in me was at the G8 in Scotland. It was on the first day of protests. And since then, within a year of that, from like July 2005, by a year later, some of these officers are referring to me by first name on first name terms, even though I didn't know who these people were. At the time I didn't even realize they were intelligence officers. I just thought that they were police officers or observers or something. I didn't realize they were surveillance.
That is from The Guardian, and there are audio and video clips, and it's just another example of a federalized police, whether it's in Maryland or whether it's in the UK, illegally spying and infiltrating supposed violent protesters. And one of the ways that they can deal with that is the Supreme Court recently upholding the president's powers to detain you indefinitely. This, of course, swirls around the case of Al-Mari. The president has the authority to detain people without charge. The Supreme Court decided, dismissing a challenge by suspected Al-Qaeda operative Ali Al-Mari. So there it is in the first line in the report from USA Today. The president has the authority to detain people without charge. The Supreme Court decided today. You know how fucking big that is? And we just go, oh yeah. It's all normalized. Mock terrorism response exercise started on March 9th. That's from the EastValleyTribune.com. Some of these all may be related. Yes, this is out of Phoenix, so this is the same thing. And this is the Coyote Crisis Campaign, which we'll mention one more time, from asunews.edu. So that's from Arizona State University. They're tied into this major disaster drill that's been going on all week in Arizona. So Coyote Crisis, March 9th through the 13th, I believe. Today was the day of whatever big event was the centerpiece of this bullshit desensitizing terror drill. We've got now another mention of Leahy's sham truth commission, now as noted by TVNewsLies.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse Richard, founder and editor of TVNewsLies.org. Today, I would like to make a few comments about the proposed truth commission that has been proposed by Senator Leahy in order to explore, examine, and learn from the conduct of the Bush administration, or the misconduct of the Bush administration during the last 8 years. Senator Leahy is proposing that we do an exploratory type of learning expedition or investigation into the conduct of the Bush administration to find, I guess, improper activity, potential crimes, potential wrongdoing, and mistakes. I love the term mistakes. So that we can learn from these mistakes and not repeat them in the future. Well, this is a sham. This is a showboat move by an American government that is forced to address in some way on a public stage the egregious actions of the most outrageously criminal operation in American history, which was the Bush administration. There is no way the new Obama administration or the current Congress, the Democratic Congress, can face the world or even the American people, mostly the Democrats, who have been up in arms over the Bush administration's conduct over the past 8 years. There's no way we can continue without at least pretending to do something about what has taken place. There are so many crimes that have been so obvious that without making some sort of gesture to the world, that makes it look like we're actually a honorable nation of truth and justice, we just couldn't go on. We just had no way of continuing on without at least making a show. That's what this truth commission is.
Leahy and his sham truth commission, however, you never know, it could be almost like a church commission. Maybe we could like actually get into the record some of the fascist things that have been going on, at least for the last 10 years or so. Military readies reservists for threats to domestic front. That is from the nationalpost.com. So, Canadian military units to undertake domestic security. Let's get the different take and cut through the shit and cut to the point. from Paul Joseph Watson. The Canadian military is reorganizing its priorities to suit a post-9/11 world by creating reservist units for each area of the country that would be tasked with providing domestic security and involve roles such as the mass internment of citizens in the event of a terrorist attack. Quote, the Canadian military has embarked on a wide-ranging plan to turn its reserve soldiers into focused units trained and equipped to respond to any nightmarish array of domestic threats, reports the National Post. It's happening here, it's happening there, it's going to happen everywhere. And we're all getting ratcheted up for it, though. And I hope, you know, I'm not playing into any of that by giving anything more attention than something else. I just like to hit all as many sides as I can and show you where we're being led along to. Chuck Norris claims thousands of right-wing cell groups exist and will rebel against the U.S. government. Homeland, homegrown terrorism. They're egging us on, basically. And both sides are doing it on both sides of the fence. Hospital deploys RFID bracelets for children. That's from RFIDjournal.com. Identification by body odor. Does it pass the smell test? That's from the Washington Times. Police confiscate more than $1 million from fish fans. Dateline Hampton, Vermont. Or rather, Hampton, Virginia. I should say, some fish fans are leaving Hampton a little lighter than when they arrived for the band's reunion weekend. Police said Monday they confiscated about $1.2 million in illegal drugs and more than $68,000 in cash from concert goers. Authorities also arrested 194 fish fans during the three-night celebration of the band's return to the stage after nearly a five-year absence. Most of the arrests were for drug possession, use, and distribution, police said. Tourism officials had estimated 75,000 fans would be coming to the coastal Virginia city. Nearly 200 law enforcement officers worked the weekend event, with the Vermont-based band picking up the tab. That's a strange little story of who's paying who to do what. Police confiscating more than $1 million worth of drugs from fish heads. Western military forces turning inward in anticipation of domestic unrest. This, again, relates to Canada and the U.S. working together for their known unknowns and their strategic shocks, and basically the idea that once, you know, ATM ain't spitting anything out, the grocery store shelves are looking a little light, and people are going to get angry. And as we've seen, they're already calling it, and thereby calling for, in the UK, the Summer of Rage. Man says he was an informant for the FBI in Orange County. This is from the LA Times, and he basically infiltrated mosques and was a agent provocateur trying to get people to say that they're jihadists. Taser launches head cams for cops. That's from Threat Level. New airport security rules to require more personal information. That's from the Chicago Tribune. Army to start liaison program with Washington State Police. From thenewstribune.com, Lakewood and Fort Lewis to start police liaison program. This was from yesterday, March 10th. And this is just from my neighbor to the north in Washington. Fort Lewis and Lakewood police are working together to build a better understanding of what happens on the other side. Lakewood police are enlisting the help of Fort Lewis for times when city cops need to cooperate with the army, including when soldiers get in trouble off post. Meanwhile, another partnership will let local army posts receive the city's assistance in civilian police training for soldiers bound for Iraq this fall. We've noted these sort of revolving door programs where cops go and be soldiers and then come back and turn into cops for God knows what. And we've noted, you know, Walmart has those great deals where you can be deployed and still have your job and da-da-da because they're one of the major components of the coming control grid. Revolving door, and we see, again, the federalization of all the states, and we do see some states fighting back I'm just nervous about how all this shit is going to play out. The CIA is, of course, beyond redemption and should be terminated. That's by way of Alex Constantine, but it's originally from Sherwood Ross, originally posted on Scoop out of New Zealand. And, of course, the CIA is beyond redemption and should be terminated. One great poll quote from this article: the CIA represents 60 years of failure and fascism, utterly at odds with the spirit of a democracy, and needs to be closed permanently. If you think this is a radical idea, think again. What is radical is to empower a mob of covert operatives to roam the planet, wreaking havoc as they go, with not a care for morality or, for that matter, the tenets of mercy implicit in any of the great faiths. The idea of not prosecuting CIA interrogators, i.e. torturers, as President Obama has hinted, is chilling. JFK said it. He wanted to smash the CIA into 1,000 pieces and scatter its ashes to the wind. And we know how that ends. Interestingly enough, the National Football League and other New World Order institutions are exempt from terrorism lawsuits. This is from USA Today. The National Football League and dozens of other companies and organizations have won exemption from lawsuits under a post-9/11 law that prohibits them from being sued if terrorists attack a site they are protecting. The law, called the Safety Act, Support Anti-Terrorism by Fostering Effective Technologies, aims to help security providers by guaranteeing they will not pay any claims that terror victims might file after an attack. The law was created in 2002 in response to multi-billion dollar lawsuits filed after 9/11 that left companies afraid they would be sued if security equipment failed to stop terrorists. The protection extends only to companies, services, or equipment that the Homeland Security Department has approved as being effective in anti-terrorism. Among those with top-tier protection is the NFL, which in December received liability exemption against future claims stemming from an attack at any of the nation's football stadiums. The law requires a court to dismiss lawsuits against companies whose products have Homeland Security's highest reliability rating. The NFL got the protection after the government approved the league's 9-page stadium security guidelines. The benefit to the NFL is fairly obvious, said NFL security chief Milt Ehrlich. An attack from a terrorist organization could put us out of business. Oh God, we wouldn't want that. League guidelines developed shortly after 9/11 include digital security cameras in stadiums, quick searches on entering spectators, and barriers that keep cars and trucks 100 feet away from the stadium. Many beneficiaries of the legal protection are large government contractors that sell equipment such as airport X-ray machines and chemical sensors. Among the other companies are aviation giant Boeing, which got the exemption for its strengthened flight deck doors on planes, and IBM, granted an exemption for its software used to more accurately verify names and identities. Homeland Security spokeswoman Amy Kudwa said the protection has led to, quote, wider deployment of anti-terrorism technologies and services. Another class of companies on the list is given a lesser form of liability protection. They can be sued, but the law limits damages to the amount of the company's insurance coverage. The law requires all of the protected companies and organizations to carry terrorism insurance. The amounts vary. NFL and other New World Order organizations are preemptively exempt from anything that they, you know, claim to actually protect from, which, of course, one, you can't protect from everything, and maybe this actually speaks to that reality. But what it's basically saying is, you know, airports can't get in trouble because, you know, maybe that metal detector didn't work, or this checklist didn't work, or... I think it's interesting that you have IBM, and you have Boeing, and you have NFL. You've got these super huge mainline New World Order institutions. IBM, of course, the solutions company, the final solutions company with the Hollow Earth punch cards that enabled the Nazis to do what they did. Boeing, of course, private military contractors par excellence, and of course, the NFL, one of the key pillars in the phony bread and circus bullshit that are fed to our nation's males that make the majority of them fat and fucking stupid. Lastly, a bombshell, which isn't really a bombshell. It's happened many times that Seymour Hersh has mentioned something audacious about Cheney. We learned today that investigative reporter Seymour Hersh dropped a bombshell on Tuesday when he told an audience at the University of Minnesota that the military is running a, quote, executive assassination ring throughout the Bush years, which reported directly to former Vice President Dick Cheney. The remark came seemingly out inadvertently when Hersh was asked about the moderator of a public discussion of America's constitutional crisis, whether abuses of executive power like those which occurred under Nixon continue to this day. Hersh replied, "After 9/11, I haven't written about this yet, but the Central Intelligence Agency was very deeply involved in domestic activities against people they thought to be enemies of the state. Without any legal authority for it, they haven't been called on it yet." Hersh then went on to describe a second area of extra legal operations, the Joint Special Operations Command. Quote, "It's a special wing of our special operations community that is set up independently. They do not report to anybody except in the Bush-Cheney days. They reported directly to the Cheney office. Congress had no oversight of it. It's an executive assassination ring, essentially, and it's been going on and on and on. Under President Bush's authority, they've been going into countries, not talking to the ambassador or the CIA station chief, and finding people on a list and executing them and leaving. That's been going on in the name of all of us." End quote. I don't know that we've seen video from that yet. However, there is, I believe, the MP3 and many links in this story from Raw Story. Executive assassination ring reported directly to Cheney. And now we're into the EnviroHealth updates on this 311 news purge. And I'll start this off with a mention that on episode 114 last Friday, I, in the middle of the show, coined the phrase Food World Order. And I kept thinking about it. I was like, ah, that's a great name. So I basically came home and bought foodworldorder.com and set up, for the moment, foodworldorder.blogspot.com. Not much up there, of course, just yet. It's kind of a shell. But I did post a video test for Media Monarchy videos to hopefully be coming soon. And I think like a dozen people watched it. And I'll probably pull the video. So if you want to see it, you better watch it soon before I yank it down. Basically a test run of trying to record little vodcasts and probably what I'll call mini-sodes of Media Monarchy. The first one I posted up to Food World Order just to kind of as a testing ground because no one's really looking at it yet. But again, now I'm telling you about it and maybe this can be something maybe a little more collaborative. There's no way I can be running a whole bunch of websites, but foodworldorder.blogspot.com. But for right now, we're on mediamonarchy.blogspot.com and covering EnviroHealth updates like California raw almonds must be treated, judge rules. That's by way of Cryptogon from the larger article from McClatchy. And of course, bringing up the first mention of the latest specter coming from the Criminal Congress, H.R. 875. What is H.R. 875? Well, according to Infowars.com, it's one of the coming Bilderberger plots to control the U.S. food supply. If left to the soft kill eugenicists and control of the government, healthy organic food produced by independent farmers will soon be a thing of the past. On February 23rd, the Federal Times, federaltimes.com, reported on H.R. 875, a bill that would grant the FDA sweeping new powers to regulate food. It was introduced by Representative Rosa DeLauro and arrived shrouded in hype, specifically the hysteria surrounding a recent salmonella outbreak linked to products from the Peanut Corporation of America. Add to the hype last year's outbreak of salmonella in imported peppers and a 2006 E. coli outbreak that was linked to fresh spinach, and the stage is set to implement the FDA's, quote, food protection plan, requiring farmers and food producers to register with the government every 2 years. That's the article from InfoWars. We also have from EcoChildsPlay.com, the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2009, the end of farmers markets and organic farms, question mark, and from NaturalNews.com, stop the federal takeover of food regulation in H.R. 875. This from Natural News. The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund recently reported the unveiling of the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2009, H.R. 875, on February 4th, 2009, by Representative Rosa DeLauro, a Democrat from Connecticut. She introduced it to both the House Committee on Energy and Commerce and the House Committee on Agriculture. Co-sponsored by 36 other congressmen, all Democrats, H.R. 875 would essentially transfer all state control over food regulation to the Food Safety Administration, the FSA, a newly established federal bureaucracy to be created within the Department of Health and Human Services. Its implications point to the elimination of all independent family farms as well as all organic farming operations due to overbearing federal regulations subjectively determined by FSA in favor of corporate factory farms. This article from naturalnews.com goes on through some of the bullet points and low points of H.R. 875. However, let's take a listen to a quick video and clip about what's coming, and that is the criminalization of organic farming through H.R. 875.
The new administration is pushing draconian farm controls through Congress as fast as possible and has coordinated the bill so there will be no debate. Opponents say they have less than 2 weeks to stop farming bills that would put organic farms out of business. The group Democracy in Action says the newfound safety bills were sponsored by agribusiness giants Monsanto, Cargill, Tyson's, and ADM. Under the bills, the Department of Agriculture would be able to order organic farmers what to feed their animals, how to medically treat them, and what toxic sprays to use. There would also be penalties beyond the ability of most small farmers to pay. Buried in the bills are regulations that criminalize all aspects of organic farming by listing them as sources of seed contamination. The bills would industrialize farms, force farmers to buy chemicals and drugs, and or face $500,000 in penalties.
Last two things on the EnviroHealth tip, another one from Enviro, or from rather naturalnews.com. Researchers suggest insufficient evidence of the efficacy of Gardasil and other HPV vaccines. And lastly, a video put together. It's up on YouTube. It's called Poison on the Platter. We're not going to check it out right now. That's going to wrap up the EnviroHealth notes. A few notes on the JFK assassination. First, we have the judge delaying the trial over the authentic JFK sniper's perch for 3 weeks. They're talking about selling basically the window jam that supposedly Lee Harvey Oswald shot JFK, yada, yada, yada. However, more recently, Mark Crispin Miller has a quick plea up on opednews.com demanding the release of the JFK files. And these kind of things may be some of the things that we may be able to actually get out of an Obama administration, is maybe the unleashing of a lot of documents that maybe to them isn't a big deal. Here, we'll throw you some JFK files. Shut the fuck up. We're trying to steal your pension. A few media meme notes. Films to combat cinema's depression. This is from The Guardian, and it's one of, now I've seen a few different articles that of course note, oh, well, in a depression, people will go to the movies because they need an escape from their shitty, dead-eyed, dreary lives. Lisa Pease, who I note many times is a great JFK and Nixon researcher, and she does realhistoryarchives.blogspot.com and is a frequent guest on blackopradio.com. She is also a big film buff and does a lot of film reviews. She's asking the question on consortiumnews.com, who wants to watch The Watchmen? However, the far better analysis of the new movie from occultist Freemason Alan Moore, this time Watchmen, the long-awaited latest comic book explosion extravaganza popcorn propaganda for the New World Order. Alex Jones breaks it down, goes through the whole film. I haven't read through Watchmen in many a year. I probably tried to read it when I was, you know, a younger teenager, and it didn't make any sense to me. Lisa Pease is interesting, like I said, and has done great work, but it seems like each time I mention her now, I have to mention the fact that she's drinking the Obama Kool-Aid and doesn't really seem to see the forest for the trees or something. Those are some of the media meme notes, so of course, recapping, basically. More people are going to go watch popcorn propaganda as the fake economy collapses because they need bread and circus and escape. And The Watchmen is basically this year's Dark Knight, another movie that pretty much puts the sort of New World Order agenda in your face, whether it be false flag terrorism or a fascist takeover. A few history mystery notes now. We, of course, have a mention and another breakdown of Clinton, Quigley, and the New World Order. There's an article and a video there for you. We've also got letter reveals John Lennon complained about the lax security at the Dakota building where he lived. Now, I had bookmarked this maybe a week or so ago, or even longer. Originally, this article is from the New York Post. However, when I went back, the link is dead, and they're no longer linking to it, and they seem to have memory-holed the article. However, other places have it, and I've got a couple links alternatively for you. Letter reveals John Lennon complained about lax security at the Dakota. Perhaps more specifically, he should have complained about the security at the Dakota. Some say it was the doorman and not Mark David Chapman who did some shooting. But we're not going there. $30 million and 10 years later, Nazi war documents are still secret. That's from Danger Room, and that's not a surprise. American Corporate Complicity and the Nazis, that's another one from Edwin Black, author of IBM and the Holocaust. And finally, this one came out today, the interesting and heartwarming story, and again, it's always been about Abraham Lincoln for these last several weeks. This from the Washington Post, the legend behind a Lincoln watch whose time for the truth has finally come, and that was about this inscription that was hidden beneath it, and they recently took it apart and discovered that it's actually there or something. I don't really care right now. Geopolitics. Because the local is global, and the personal is political. We have videos, and we have articles, and we've mentioned the wave of shootings, and we'll always seemingly find out that they were either and or pharmaceuticals, and or the feds, and or prior knowledge to many of these big primetime style events. Security guards stood down as gunmen killed Northern Ireland soldiers. This is from timesonline.co.uk by way of Aftermath News. Armed security guards employed to protect the military base in Northern Ireland, where two soldiers were shot dead, did not open fire on the terrorist, even when they stood over the injured men and fired further shots.
24 hours after the ambush at the Mazarine Barracks, police stopped every vehicle passing the murder scene just in case someone had made the same journey the night before and could have information on the killers. It's a long shot, but nothing can be left to chance in an investigation that is about so much more than a cold-blooded slaying. This murderous assault on the Northern Ireland peace process has brought revulsion from politicians and public alike. If the gunmen thought they might have some support for their cause, they were horribly mistaken here.
Everybody in this province, nobody wants this. Nobody wants this back at all. And it's only a very small minority. And hopefully everybody will see that. That not everybody is like this. This isn't what we like at all.
The hunt for the killers goes on. All that's known about them is they are from what's known as the Real IRA, a dissident Republican group who want no part of the peace process here. The Real IRA was formed in 1997 after the Provisional IRA decided to abandon the armed struggle for a united Ireland. It was the Real IRA that was responsible for the Omagh bombing in 1998, killing 29 people, including a pregnant woman carrying twins. And they and another splinter group, the Continuity IRA, have carried out a series of attacks on police in Northern Ireland in recent months. But even Sinn Féin's Martin McGuinness, himself vehemently opposed to the British Army's presence in Northern Ireland, says the soldiers' killers will not win.
The people who conducted that attack are the enemies of the peace process. They're also the enemies of the people of this island, who democratically in referendum made it quite clear that they wanted the Good Friday Agreement to succeed. So what we have to do is continue to make politics work.
At the home of one of the injured in the gun attack, pizza delivery man Anthony Watson, blinds are drawn and journalists turned away as Anthony, who's 19, recovers in the nearby hospital. The murder of two British soldiers just hours before they were due to join their units in Afghanistan could have fractured the peace process here in Northern Ireland. The fact that it hasn't is testament to just how far this province has come in renouncing violence as a way forward. David Bowden, Sky News, at Mazarine Barracks in Antrim.
There is video, and there are many questions. I don't have too many links and too much information on this story right now because I'm basically swimming in information overload. But again, another example, another big shooter event, and we'll find out that there were drills and feds involved. Pakistan militants claim drone shoot down. That's from the AFP. U.S. missile attacks on Pakistan to dramatically increase. This is by way of Infowars.com. And another one from Paul Joseph Watson. A British newspaper says that officials in contact with the U.S. State Department have been briefed on plans to intensify military attacks on Pakistan despite strong objections to the policy from the Pakistani government. A new offensive would see a dramatic increase in Predator drone attacks on Taliban targets, reports the London Daily Telegraph, which says it learned of the plans from the State Department contacts and senior diplomats. And there are articles are in links and quotes and all there for you if you don't believe that. And of course, 2 days in office, we were bombing Pakistan with Obama's approval. Change. U.S. military chief backs counterinsurgency for Mexico. That's by way of globalresearch.ca. And I even saw more articles today where they keep saying and they keep putting it out there. They keep floating these balloons. They're like, well, yeah, we're thinking about sending some troops to Mexico. Again, we're into geopolitics, so we're hitting other countries' news reports about other countries' news. Russia Today has the video and the report of North Korea putting its troops on alert.
North Korea's military is on full combat alert this morning as the US and South Korea hold joint war games. Pyongyang also says any attempts to intercept the launch of a communications satellite it's planning to send into orbit would be an act of war. RT's Svetlana Karakina brings you up to date.
What North Korea says is a launch of a satellite the US and South Korea claim may be a cover for a ballistic missile test. The US and Japan say they could shoot it down. Pyongyang has threatened war if they do. But while many accuse North Korea of belligerent rhetoric, some Russian analysts believe it's not Pyongyang that's going over the top.
We have no proof that it's a ballistic missile. North Korea clearly says that it's a satellite, and if indeed it's shot down, it would be a very unpleasant international incident.
The North has also put its military on alert as South Korea kicked off joint war games with the US. In protest, Pyongyang cut off its hotline with the South. The US routinely holds exercises with South Korea. Pyongyang sees them as a dry run for invasion. And despite assurances from Seoul and Washington that drills are defensive, some think North Korea has reason to get jumpy.
26,000 U.S. troops alone are taking part, and 50,000 from South Korea. It's bigger than last year, so it's understandable that the North sees it as a provocation.
Since the 1953 Korean War, ceasefire relations between Pyongyang, Seoul, as well as the U.S. and Japan have remained strained. 6 years ago, President George Bush dubbed North Korea part of an axis of evil. But last year, Washington dropped it from the list of states sponsoring terrorism. Now some experts say Pyongyang's tough words are a public relations stunt to grab Barack Obama's attention as his administration makes its North Korea policy.
They might also took a lesson from Obama initiative to consider negotiations with Taliban, because in Afghanistan it shows that that when you're playing hardball with the U.S. in foreign policy, it pays.
And in this game of harsh talking, many agree there's more hype than beef. Svetlana Kurakina, RT.
North Korea putting its troops on alert and shoes being hurled at Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in an Iranian city. So this has been a fun little activity that seems to have taken off around the world, throwing shoes at your corrupt bastard leaders. And hopefully we'll start to see more of it. Maybe we'll start to see it, you know, people throw shoes at even their mayor or their town councilman. From presidents to town councilmen, we should always expose corruption. Like this. The ex-Israeli president being a serial sex offender. That's by way of Time Magazine and one of their Middle East blogs. Finally, the last three headlines I have for you come from the BBC, The Telegraph, and Alex Constantine by way of the Los Angeles Times, where we have two different takes on an event. Chinese ships harass U.S. vessel, and China accuses U.S. Navy of breaking the law, and China saying U.S. provoked this naval confrontation. So we'll go to the third one from the Los Angeles Times. Reporting from Shanghai, China blamed the United States on Tuesday for a naval confrontation in the South China Sea over the weekend, contending that an American surveillance vessel was illegally conducting activities in China's special economic zone. The U.S. Defense Department had complained that five Chinese ships surrounded and harassed the Impeccable, a submarine surveillance ship, in international waters on Sunday. The Chinese boats dropped wood debris in the Impeccable's path, and one of the ships came within 25 feet of the unarmed U.S. vessel, the Pentagon said, calling the actions dangerous, unprofessional, and in violation of international law. God knows which of these ridiculous, provocative actions are going to go down, and we'll see a new Gulf of Tonkin. Lastly, finally, thankfully, on this massive 311 news purge, it's time for the Econo crash, and we've got an article and a video about tens of thousands rallying against tax hikes in New York.
New Yorkers are fed up and frustrated with the recession, and tonight they're showing it.
Chopper 2 HD is live over Broadway at City Hall. Tens of thousands of protesters line the street, rallying against budget cuts affecting everything from education to health care. CBS 2's Hazel Sanchez is on the ground there. Hazel.
As you can hear, this is quite a spirited crowd. At one point, organizers estimated there were some 50,000 people lined here on Broadway outside City Hall with a very simple message for the governor. Cuts are not the answer.
Do we want a fair share? Do we deserve a fair share?
Thousands upon thousands of New Yorkers from labor unions, community groups, and even families formed a sea of solidarity outside City Hall. They are fighting for fair share tax reform and protesting proposed state and city budget cuts. The cuts could be made to public services, education, health care, and other programs that impact families and the economy in New York. Protesters are demanding Governor Patterson avoid slashing critical programs by increasing the income tax of New Yorkers making $250,000 or more.
Patterson, I wish he would have an open heart and see within his heart that we are going to suffer if we just budget cut goes through.
Hospitals are closing down left and right. We cannot allow that to happen. We really cannot allow it to happen. So we are here just to show Governor Patterson that probably he's not seeing clear.
The cutback is putting people out of jobs, no health care, and then also the education part of it is wrong. And he needs to revise what he's doing and do what's supposed
supposed to be right for the people.
The temperature is dropping out here, but if you see behind me, the crowd is not going anywhere. They say times are tough, but workers are tougher, and they will continue to fight for their fair share of the economic pie. We are here at the scene outside City Hall. Hazel Sanchez, CBS Tribune.
That protest is causing chaos for commuters in Lower Manhattan. Let's go out to Joe Bierman and Chopper 2 HD for details on that. Joe, how's it going down there?
Hey, Don, it's starting to get a little bit better. The vast majority of the crowd has left. They've actually opened up some of the lanes on Broadway, but we're left over with the gridlock conditions. That's Park Row. The inbound Brooklyn Bridge is at a complete standstill from the Brooklyn side all the way over, as well as the Manhattan Bridge is bumper to bumper all the way across. One unusual area is West Street is jammed from the 20s all the way down to Battery Park as people avoid the internal roadways. Live in Chopper 2 HD, Joe Bierman, CBS 2 News.
50,000 rally against tax hikes in New York. That is by way of the epochtimes.com, and the video is up on YouTube. And again, thanks to Infowars.com. Green jobs won't do much to end the recession. That's from McClatchy, and that's something that Webster Tarpley has been saying for months now. The gangrene jobs won't do it. It's literally tilting at windmills. Jim DeMint mentions some small riots that might be coming up. And four plead not guilty after probe of anti-tax group. This is from the San Francisco Guardian. Four plead not guilty after probe of anti-tax group, Dateline Las Vegas. Four men associated with an anti-government, anti-tax movement have pleaded not guilty to charges stemming from a three-year FBI investigation. Samuel Davis, 54, of Council, Idaho, Sean Rice, 46, of Seligman, Arizona, Harold Call, 67, of Las Vegas, and Jan Lindsay of Henderson entered the pleas in federal court in Las Vegas Friday. Prosecutors say the men are all associated with the Sovereign Movement, which aims to overthrow the government through paper terrorism and violence. Davis and Rice are facing conspiracy and money laundering charges. Call is charged with possession of an unregistered machine gun, and Lindsay is charged with tax evasion. U.S. Magistrate Judge Lawrence Levitt released the men until their trial dates, initially scheduled for May. None of the defendants have prior criminal histories. Again, demonizing homegrown terrorism and their anti-government. It is also important to note that Jan Lindsay of Henderson, the one who's been charged with tax evasion, is featured in the late, great Aaron Russo's From Freedom to Fascism. Bomb has damaged a Citibank branch in Athens, Greece. That's from the Sydney Morning Herald. And the last two notes on the Econo crash are about the Madoff pyramid scheme, Ponzi scandal. However, it is important to note two things, and we're going to hit them. First, from Kurt Nemo, Bernie Madoff circus sideshow attraction. It looks like Ponzi scammer and former chairman of the NASDAQ, Bernie Madoff, will be allowed to enter into a plea deal with prosecutors. It is possible he may not see the inside of a prison cell, but more likely he will get a light sentence and be shipped off to one of those golf club minimum security facilities reserved for wealthy criminals. However, Kurt Nemo goes on to point out that this is small potatoes. We can focus our little 2 minutes hate on Bernie Madoff. Meanwhile, the real criminals are still running around doing their thing. The other important thing to note, and this is a funny one, and this one actually came to me in my news feed that gives me news about JFK assassination updates. However, anytime any articles reference JFK assassination, it comes up. So there is one called Bernie Madoff, the single bullet head theory, and this is from businessinsider.com. I don't have time to go through this article, but basically this guy's saying, I don't believe in stupid, you know, conspiracy theories like JFK, but I do in this case. So actually, let's do it. The article's not that long. This is John Carney writing for BusinessInsider.com. Bernie Madoff, the single bullet head theory. While many people are talking about silly things like how many years Bernie Madoff won't ever serve in prison, no matter how long his sentence, he'll be dead in a decade or so, or how many hundreds of billions of fines he'll never pay, no matter what a court says, he's probably only got tens of millions to his name, we're missing the more important question, namely, who was helping Madoff? His indictment doesn't include any conspiracy charges and doesn't even point to unknown John Doe's or Jane Doe's who might have assisted him in the scam. Veteran investigative reporter Gary Weiss says this is just ridiculous. There's no way that Madoff acted alone. So now we're quoting Gary Weiss. Gary Weiss, W-E-I-S-S, .blogspot.com. Nothing about the culpability of his wife Ruth, about how she wound up with millions of dollars now supporting hubby's lifestyle, which we hit last week. So what we have so far is a sort of equivalent to the JFK's assassination single bullet theory. Now, don't get me wrong, I happen to believe in the JFK single bullet theory. But the idea that a single bullet head named Madoff could perpetrate this crime, now that I don't believe. White-collar crime fighter Sam Antar of Crazy Eddie fame, appearing on Fox Business News the other day, says that Madoff is now protecting the other conspirators who must surely exist, the people who knew about it and the people who turned a blind eye. So, who are they and why have they not been indicted? Or are prosecutors going to push a single bullet head theory of the Madoff crimes? That's implied by the criminal charges talking about the clerical employees of the firm being ignorant and inexperienced. Baloney. Mental gymnastics sometimes. So there again, we have a guy saying, well, you know, I don't believe in conspiracies, except in this case. Just like we can see it in movies, we can see it in TV, but when it plays out on our newspaper every day, we go, they wouldn't do that. We're going to wildly shift gears now as we go over our last few stories on this B-side. 114 of MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to shift to my home state, the often beleaguered, but still almost heaven, West Virginia. Graves go missing as West Virginia coal companies expand. This by way of the Associated Press. And I want to say that this story, I believe, started out as a smaller report just regionally and from Examiner.com and one of their West Virginia examiners. But as the days went by, ended up running more nationally, thanks to the Associated Press picking up the story in other places. Graves go missing as West Virginia coal companies expand. Walter Young can't find his great-grandfather's grave. The coal company that had it moved doesn't know where the remains ended up. It always looked like a safe, good place nobody would bother, the 63-year-old retiree said of the cemetery along Pigeon Creek, where his relative Martha Curry was buried. It was up on a hill. But that hill was in West Virginia's southern coal fields, and over the years it changed hands. The land around and under the cemetery passed from one coal company to another as mines grew up around it. Now, no one is sure where Young's great-grandmother was ultimately laid to rest. I may have misspoke at the beginning. Walter Young can't find his great-grandmother's grave. The loss is a problem that resonates across West Virginia as small family cemeteries and unmarked graves get in the way of mining, timbering, and development interests. Advocates are asking state lawmakers this year to enact regulations that would require better tracking of the graves and protect families who believed that their loved ones wouldn't be disturbed. We just keep hearing about more and more cases of it, said Carol Warren, a project coordinator with the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, OHVEC.org, the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, based out of West Virginia, but on the border and through there is the Ohio Valley. Bill Rainey, president of the West Virginia Coal Association, says coal operators follow the law and try to be sensitive when cemeteries get in the way, treating families with dignity. However, he can't say how often such disputes arise. International Coal Group's Patriot Mining Company is currently in court in northern West Virginia seeking approval to relocate a cemetery where the last burial occurred more than 70 years ago. Patriot received permission last year to move another nearby cemetery. There's a few links in this story, mostly to the sources themselves, like the International Coal Group and the West Virginia Coal Association and the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition. However, the two things that really strike me is, one, at least twice in this article, we hear of how, like this, the loss is a problem that resonates across West Virginia. Small family cemeteries and unmarked graves get in the way of mining. And then Bill Rainey, president of the West Virginia Coal Association, says coal operators follow the law and try to be sensitive when cemeteries get in the way. So it keeps, it's the cemeteries' fault. It's the cemeteries that are getting in the way of all this. The other thing to note is, as I've mentioned probably every time that it's applicable, Peter LaVenda, in his amazing trilogy of books, Sinister Forces, spends the first part of the first book speaking about ancient burial grounds in West Virginia, in Kentucky, around in those areas. And basically, the overarching idea is that after we've desecrated many of those areas, that if there are holy sites in the world, and of course, you know, we have sites that are world, you know, renowned as being holy sites, whether it's the Wailing Wall in Mecca or what have you, couldn't there also be unholy sites? And it's further examples of things that have been going on for a long time and things that we've done to our ancestors and to the people who inhabited these lands before us. And is it possible that their disturbed spirits will haunt us in a way described in Sinister Forces? One of these days, I may do my own audiobook recordings of the Sinister Forces books. But not now. Because now we have to talk about Hillary, and I'm so glad she reminded us to never waste a crisis. This from Kurt Nimmo, and of course links to the New York Sun and Reuters and more. Bilderberg guest Hillary Clinton has instructed the European Parliament and millions of young Europeans to never waste a good crisis, a reference to the bankster-engineered economic implosion. Clinton, quote, highlighted the opportunity of rebuilding economies in a greener, less energy-intensive model, reports Reuters. In other words, the elites should take advantage of the situation in order to impose carbon taxes and other schemes on humanity.
I'm actually excited by this opportunity. I'm very well aware that we are not yet through this economic crisis, but you know, we have the chief of staff for President Obama is an old friend of mine and my husband's, and was in the White House when Bill was there, and he said, you know, never waste a good crisis. And when it comes to the economic crisis, don't waste it when it can have a very positive impact on climate change and energy security, and that's what we're trying to do.
Yes, so crisis is a chance, and thank you for your answer, and I may inform you and you that the European Parliament has finalized its legislation concerning climate change in December, and we were waiting for the new administration that we have the leaders together, and so the others can join in, and we hopefully, as Secretary Clinton said, we will get an agreement then in Copenhagen in December.
I guess I can't get through an episode without mentioning or playing a clip of the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul. Not perfect, but he's one of the more vocal advocates for liberty out there right now. So we need to cover it, and we need to spread the word about it. However, he was recently, last Saturday, on D.L. Hughley's now-canceled show on CNN. CNN's D.L. Hughley Breaks the News. I think he has maybe two more episodes left, so another talk show tanks. But he did have the chance to have the Honorable Dr. Ron Paul on the show. And again, raw story, raw replay, our closet, I think, 9/11 truthers and Ron Paul fans, because they do cover both fairly and fairly often. Representative Ron Paul told CNN's D.L. Hughley that Rush Limbaugh certainly doesn't represent me.
Hughley and Paul found agreement on other matters, too. Neither Paul or Hughley supported bailouts for General Motors and the banks. The amazing thing is you don't seem like a Republican to me that I've ever heard. You seem so reasonable. No, honestly, you really do. You seem to make sense, which I don't attribute to very many politicians. There are links in there to the full transcript, and of course, CQPolitics.com has more, as we briefly breezed over last week, and that's the stupid, phony, left-right bullshit dog and pony show in WWONW wrestling bullshit. Rush Limbaugh and all that garbage. D.L. Hughley's Breakfast to the News notes that Ron Paul is too human to be a Republican.
Republican Congressman Ron Paul. Ron, you ran for president. When you dropped out, you did not back John McCain. Obviously, you have some issues with some members of your party, right?
Right, yeah. When they don't live up to their promises, you know, if they call themselves fiscal conservatives and then they double the size of the budget and the deficit, then I can't with a clear conscience support them.
So you were against George Bush's big spending, too.
Oh, absolutely. And certainly I was against his foreign policy and his violation of personal civil liberties, the privacy that he was invading and the secrecy of government. I didn't like any of that. I'm sort of an old-fashioned conservative that believes in the Constitution.
Now, you voted against the President Obama's stimulus package. Obviously, you had reservations about that. Why was that?
Well, I don't think it's going to do any good. Most of that money so far hasn't helped the little guy. It's going to Wall Street. If they'd have taken all that money and just sent checks out, we'd have been better off. I would like to get the money in the hands of the people. I don't trust the government, and I don't trust the politicians and the bureaucrats because they bail out their buddies. What we want is to get more money in the hands of the people. That's why I would just suspend the income tax, and everybody would get a pay raise immediately. And there are still a few people that are employed, so this would be a big boost to the economy. Then the people make the decisions rather than bailing out corporate giants and banks, and then they take their money and they get billions of dollars worth of bonuses. It's absolutely out of control.
But Ron, okay, I too was against the bailout. But some aspects of the stimulus package, I see some, you know, like as far as extending unemployment benefits of people, making those a little longer, and things like that, other attributes of the stimulus package. I agree with some of those, but the bailout, I have to say, I was totally against it. I didn't think that we should have bailed out the GM. I thought some of the banks, I could see how that was necessary. But honestly, what do we do then?
Well, you have to understand how we got into this mess. And we got into this mess because
we spent like there was no tomorrow. We all spent like there was no tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, we elected the Republicans to back off from big government, and they doubled the size of everything and ran up the deficit. So we spent too much, we borrowed too much, and then we started putting pressure on the Fed, and the Fed acts on their own, and they started inflating, that is, creating credit out of thin air. They're the ones who really causes the boom, and they literally bring about the bust. You know, after the Depression ended, after the World War II, the spending went down 2/3 and taxes went down 1/3. And that's when the Depression finally ended in the late 40s.
Wow. You know, the amazing thing is that you don't seem like a Republican to me, like that I've ever heard. You seem so reasonable. No, honestly, you really do. You seem to make sense, which I don't attribute to very many politicians.
Okay, go ahead.
But the government does have to do something. I think we're very panicked. I think the electorate is clearly nervous. The government has to do something to kind of lay their fears, or we'll never get on track, right?
Yeah, and that is true, and we could if we had some sensible people here. And I, even though I am a strict constitutionalist, I don't believe in most of these programs, I still have an interim set of priorities. I would cut $400, $500 billion from overseas. I don't think it makes any sense to blow up bridges in Iraq and then pay to rebuild them to no-bid contracts where the corporations never rebuild. I say spend all that money back here at home. We could save enough money just changing our foreign policy, cutting down on our deficit, and still take care of people that we have taught to be so dependent. We spend over $1 trillion a year maintaining the American empire, but nobody wants to give up on the empire.
Wow.
Not even this new administration. They're pursuing the Bush policy. policies in the Middle East, and they're not cutting back. And yesterday I gave a speech on the House floor, and I literally bet the troops will not be out of Iraq in 2011.
Right.
Because we're going to have a big embassy, and we're going to have 56 military bases, and believe me, that is very offensive to the people of Iraq.
Ryan, you're too human to be a Republican. Now, I was on Bill Maher about a year and a half ago or so, and you came on, and you came on by satellite, and you were explaining about the Civil War, how it didn't need to be fought. And I was at first like, he's saying it didn't need to be fought. But when you explained it to me, I thought it was one of the most pragmatic, reasonable things I ever heard a politician say.
Well, you know, the other nations in the West that had slavery all got rid of slavery without a civil war. And the motivation behind the civil war had more to do than just the slavery
right.
issue. So we lost 600,000 Americans and a lot of residual, probably some left over today. There's
right.
still residual. So you could have, with a small fraction of the money and no debt, just bought the slaves, you know, and freed the slaves. That's what Britain did in some other nations, and that just makes a lot more sense than fighting a war and killing each other.
I
like this war as a solution to our problems.
So. You make way too much sense. You can't be a Republican. I'll say it again. Are you going to run again in 2012?
Well, I might be running from somebody or running for Congress or who knows what.
Thank you, Congressman Ron Paul. It was a pleasure, man.
The last couple things we're going to hit on this B-side are the latest episodes from some of my favorite podcasters and webmasters and radio hosts and alternative researchers. First, the two latest episodes from Corbett Report, episode 76, Meet the Real Economist. The corporate-controlled media laughed when they were told that the Fed's funny money didn't amount to real wealth. Now, as that imaginary wealth disappears as predicted, we turn to those experts who told the emperor had no clothes. From cartoons to university lectures to the nexus of theater and Wall Street, Meet the Real Economist on episode 76 of the Corbett Report. Episode 77 is called Canada's Genocide. Canadians enjoy an international image based on peacekeeping and goodwill, but Canadian history harbors its own dark secrets. Join the Corbett Report on this episode 77, where they talk to Kevin Annette about what the Canadian government has hidden from history, and they highlight the work of Native activist Splitting the Sky. Episode 76 and 77 of CorbettReport.com. Finally now, and this, in a way, is going to set the table, and first let me note that actually my man Robert, coworker, fan of the show, gives me tips. We talk about all this stuff. He said to me, he was like, man, thanks for posting up, you know, the episodes of some of those other things, Ground Zero and stuff. But I have to tell you, sometimes I've now watched those instead of listening to your new show. But that's fantastic. So I believe Robert was mentioning that in reference to this, the latest episode that I have from Clyde Lewis and the Ground Zero Lounge, Genome 666, the Project Purity. This was originally put up on March 2nd, recorded live every Monday evening in front of a live audience at Dante's Inferno in Portland, Oregon. The Ground Zero Lounge features Clyde Lewis in this audience participation discussion of current events as they relate to the paranoia. Ground Zero Lounge, Genome 666.
Show tonight's called Genome 666, the Project Purity. And something that, you know, it's been weighing on me. How many people remember the story? It was in the news a while back about a woman named Natalia, Nadia Suleiman, who gave birth to 8 children by applause. Anybody? I hear some booing. Can you tell me why you're booing? Just come off. Now, by the way, these microphones are here for you. So if you want to say why you're booing, I want to hear. Why are you booing this?
Nobody should have 8 children.
Nobody should have 8 children.
Before you
say it. Okay. Do everybody agree that no one should have 8 children? Okay. Go ahead and get a microphone.
14.
I know, you're getting ahead of yourself. I'll get to that in a minute.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, you're going to explain that?
Well, sure, I'm going to explain that. You bet. Okay, Nadia Suleiman gave birth to 8 children. The birth of the octuplets has raised controversies regarding their mother's decision to have a large family without any means of independent income, and the physician's decision to help her get these children, okay? It's not just her here, okay? They took 6 or 7, they took all these embryos and they showed them to this woman, and they took, okay? And how would she pay for it if she didn't have the money to do it anyway? Someone, and this is a conspiracy here, someone did this on purpose. Okay, they did this on purpose. Yes, somebody's applauding. They did it on purpose to send a message. And I believe I know what that message is, and I'm going to get to that tonight. Suleiman also, according to Sarah, and which is true, she had 6 other children from a former in vitro fertilization. So not only is this fertilization a bad thing because the doctor gave her this stuff, but she had 6 other kids that she has to take care of. Now, they're being cared for by the grandmother because there's just too damn many kids, 14 kids all at once, right? And the question is, why is a woman in poverty been allowed to have 14 babies using the expensive reproduction technology? Well, here's an idea as to why. We have 8, what's that?
Student loans.
Student loans, yeah, we're ahead. Student loans, that's cute. Yeah, 8 more children. It's just crazy. Oh, and welfare, too. I'm sure she's getting some dividends for that as well. You're right. I'm very sure of that.
Yeah?
Well, okay. But that takes a while, though, right? It's going to take a while for the student loans. By the way, if you want to say something, if it's brilliant, come on the mic, it'll be great. Because we're broadcasting. No, nobody's going to get you. I mean, you just did pretty good stuff there. So, you know, people want to do good stuff out there. It'd be awesome. So, anyway, here we have this situation going on. It's being investigated by the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. The controversy swirling around this whole thing is reproductive ethics, but there is a story behind the story that I want to get to tonight, and it's going to really get a little spooky. And maybe not, because I'm sure a lot of you feel, okay, I want to ask a couple of you if you want to volunteer to do your feelings. This woman had 8 children. I want you to come to the microphone. I want you to yell it out if you have the courage to do this. What do you think should happen to Natalia? What do you think should happen to people like Natalia? Does anybody want to volunteer their feelings as to what should be done? Am I going to stand here and beg you? What do you think should be done to this woman? And I want to hear some information. The reason why I want to know is because I want to know the overall feelings about this woman having 8 children. We already heard the booze. We already heard all these other things. Yes.
She should be publicly chastised by radio personalities.
Is that Go ahead. Go ahead.
Actually, that's not too different from what I was going to say, because if you start putting legal ramifications on that, then you get into a whole Big Brother and control of reproduction system and all that.
Really?
Social stigmatism is much better than actual legal.
How many people believe that women like Natalia should be sterilized by applause? Yeah. I thought so. You guys each again. Come out and say you want her sterilized. Go ahead, Fred.
What about the poor SOBs, the father? Should they have a part of it?
I have no idea. They still have a controversy with the father. Okay, here we have somebody else who's saying this.
Well, I heard that more than one of her first original 6 children were disabled.
Yeah, I'll get to that too, yes. They one's autistic, a couple others have some problems.
I am the father of a disabled child.
Right.
I have to say that that in itself is a pretty darn every minute of the day issue.
Mm-hmm.
For someone like that to kind of go on to have 8 additional children,
right,
to me is a very selfish thing.
It is selfish, I agree. You can say something? Go ahead.
Greetings, program. I would love to marry her. I love kids.
Oh, okay. Good for you. Okay, go ahead.
I have to say you all frighten me. I've always believed that if I support my right not to have any children, I have to support her right to do that, because support of reproductive freedom goes both ways. I'm sorry, I don't have to like it, and I don't, but I do believe it is so.
Okay. I give her a hand, because I believe it. But it's interesting to know that when I said we should sterilize her, you guys applauded loudly. See, with the birth of Nadia Suleiman's octuplets, we're confronting a perfect storm for eugenic outcry. Okay? When you guys all plot to sterilize this woman, you're all into the idea of eugenics.
Yep.
So applaud that.
That's a clip from the latest episode of Ground Zero Lounge from Clyde Lewis, Genome 666, The Project Purity. Now, first let me say, I've, you know, now been listening and watching Ground Zero Lounge for several months now. I've never seen the audience get so animated and into the discussion so early into the show as to when, in this clip that we just heard, somewhere right around in there, is when he starts to talk about the octuplets and eugenics. And that got everybody going. That is going to do it for this B-side of episode 114 of MediaMonarchy.com. Sorry, it's kind of a long one. There's a lot to go over. It makes my head spin as well, and I'm glad you come to MediaMonarchy.com for your source for news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. I love doing it for you. It's educational for me. I hope it's educational for you. What I've done now by finishing out on this latest episode from Ground Zero Lounge is set the table for the return of Clyde Lewis to Media Monarchy this Friday the 13th on the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network and KBFR in Boulder and Free Radio Olympia in Washington and anywhere in the world that's reblasting MediaMonarchy.com. Clyde Lewis returns in studio at the Portland Radio Authority for the last Media Monarchy episode in our current Portland Radio Authority space, where we move to a new building in the southeast of Portland in a building called Active Space. And I think it's going to be good. The studio is going to be built up. We should be able to take calls. We're going to be in an actual booth where you can be in a booth by yourself, which we've not really been. And hopefully it'll be good. I'm sure there'll be some hiccups. I'm not sure what episode 116 is going to be like on the 20th of March. That should be the first new Media Monarchy episode in the new space. But God knows if there's going to be any hiccups or how it's going to work out. So you never know. Some unforeseen thing may happen. That 20th, of course, being right about the first day of spring. But episode 115, this Friday the 13th, with Clyde Lewis. I'm going to try and go over everything from the Ides of March, as we're seeing, the Pacific Northwest, and the original X-Files and Guy Bannister, as well as Denver and Atlanta and Atlantis and the new world airport and Reagan and UFOs and the coming space war and the UK Queen, Gordon Brown and the Crown and all that swirls around that, as well as the latest mass shootings and Oregon oddities. I'm excited. I can't wait to have Clyde Lewis back in the studio this Friday, episode 115. So until then, I thank you for listening. Again, I can't express it enough, the contact and the comments that I get from folks who I never knew were listening and digging the show and digging the website. I appreciate it, and it means the world. But spread it around. As the window closes, we got to cover as much of this as we can, because at some point, doing this and doing the website and doing the podcast may not really be a possibility. So on that sad note, that's going to do it. So, and this is what I'm saying, like my man Webster Griffin Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
How would you explain it?
Combining music and stylized images.
It's all remote control.
Each one of those images was electronically based.
Same boat on my threat.
And that concludes our program for tonight.
This could really catch on.
I can't remember when I've been so moved.